Well, the sermon title this Sunday, if it didn't make it in, I haven't looked at the bulletin, whatever, is called What's Wrong with Upside Down? Because I was looking at these texts, and, well, that's the first thing that came to mind. Now, personally, I think there's lots of things wrong with being upside down. It makes the blood rush to your head and your face turns red, but in this case, we're talking more metaphorically than that. And what we're looking at, once again, is Jesus' teaching on the Sermon on the Mount, this big, long passage in Matthew. I remember when I was a young person, I would flip through the Bible to see how many pages were all red, because the words of Jesus were put in red, and this was always the longest. So I figured it must be important. I didn't read it, because, of course, that would be silly at that age, because I didn't know what I was doing. But since then, I've read it a number of times, and the more time I spend in the Sermon on the Mount, the more surprised I am. Not so much by what it says, but by what it wants us to do. There's this idea out there now, and this is not something that's common within this particular body of faith, but there's this idea out there that Jesus is this, oh, I don't know, martial kind of person. You can get bumper stickers with Jesus holding an AK-47. That, by the way, is taking the Lord's name in vain. Stubbing your toe and suggesting that God, damn the coffee table or something, is not. Taking the Lord's name in vain is ascribing to the Lord things that are not true, not just losing your temper at things. And I come back over and over and over again to these people, some of whom I know, who keep pushing this idea of this kind of Jesus. And I think, well, you know what? When Jesus came and what he talked about is essentially upside down to everything that our culture tends to tell us is important. Our culture tells us on an ongoing basis that the most important thing is status, money, comfort, security, and those sorts of things. And as is always the case with evil, one of the things that C.S. Lewis talks about, he says that evil is fundamentally incapable of creating anything. So what evil does is it takes something and then makes it evil. It doesn't start from scratch. So there's nothing wrong with money. No matter how many times you mishear that phrase of Paul's, there's nothing wrong with money. The love of money is the root of all evil. Money is money. Money is a thing. That's like saying a pew is the root of all evil or a paved road. You know, it's a tool. It's just all there is to it. There's nothing wrong with comfort. There's nothing wrong with wanting to feel secure. There's nothing wrong with having status. It's when we raise these things to the levels that we have raised them now, where we now take our sort of the tone of our culture from a small group of people who have created literally nothing, who charge rent to people all over the world in the form of the operating system on your phone or your computer, who produce nothing, have produced nothing, but have been clever enough to steal from people smarter than them. And we have raised them up to say that these are the people who can tell us how our lives can be better run. So when I say, what's wrong with upside down? I'm saying, what's wrong with turning that upside down? Because that's what Jesus talks about. And when Jesus talks about this whole range of things that we should do and the way we should be, last week we talked about the Beatitudes, about being poor in spirit, about being merciful, about being all of these things that probably won't get you a seat on Joe Rogan's podcast, or your own podcast for that matter. All of these things that when you say them out loud in the wrong church, you'll have people complaining about you bringing your woke liberal commie doctrine into the church when you read the Beatitudes. I really hope that's an apocryphal story. But I'm afraid it might not be. Because what Jesus calls us to do is so antithetical to what we are seeing as value now. I'm not talking about us as individuals, because I don't want this to come across as some irritating pastoral screed against you, because you're not the kind of people. But we need to be reminded on a regular basis what our culture is trying to push us into. Because that's how these things work. They don't work overnight. They take time to happen. Once again, to borrow from Brother C.S. Lewis, he never said, or one of the things he said is that evil does not come to you saying, I'm here to destroy your soul. Evil comes to you and says, wouldn't this be better? Wouldn't it be better if everybody in our towns and cities looked like us? Wouldn't it be better if people who were poor would just realize that they deserve to be poor and they should go away? Well, when we're looking at that kind of pressure, it's important to be reminded that that is what it is. And we read over and over again, Paul in particular talks about, don't be conformed to this world, this culture. He's not talking about being a normal human being, eating and breathing and drinking water and things. He's saying, don't be conformed to what the culture of the day is trying to press you into. And that's hard. That's really hard. Swimming upstream, that's not even easy for salmon, and they're born for it. It's a difficult thing to do what we're called to do. I mean, when you look at Isaiah, because this isn't just new, it's all through Scripture. In the Isaiah passage we had read for us, you'll see all kinds of things in there about people giving in to culture and then complaining to God about it. Because they say, hey, we fasted and you didn't do what we wanted you to do. We humbled ourselves and you didn't seem to notice. And Isaiah, speaking on behalf of God, said, yet on the day of your fasting, you do as you please and exploit all your workers. Your fasting ends in quarreling and strife. You strike each other with wicked fists. You cannot fast as you do today and expect your voice to be heard on high. Jesus laid out, or God laid out in the Old Testament, ways of fasting, times of fasting, what they were supposed to look like. And they weren't supposed to look like exploiting your workers. One of the things that I find so fascinating is the number of people who are willing to go in semi-public places like online and talk about how we need to stop bringing Jesus into politics because Jesus was not political. And I just think, you've never read any of it, have you? There isn't a thing that Jesus says that isn't political. It might not be political to us in how we understand things, but if you have a sniff of an idea of what things were like in the Roman Empire at that time, everything Jesus says is political, which is why the political part of the state killed him. If he wasn't being political, they wouldn't care. Isaiah talks about, if we're not going to do the things the way they're supposed to be done, then what do you expect? And goes on to say, this is what I've asked you to do. Loose the chains of injustice, untie the cords of yoke that holds down the oppressed, share your food with the hungry, to provide for the poor, the wanderer with shelter, clothe the naked, and don't turn away from your own family. Then your light will break forth like the dawn. There's a series of thens that come after that. And it's because God is saying, and then Jesus says later, that there are ways to do things. And if what you're doing is not that way, you shouldn't be too surprised that the outcome is not what you want. It's like parents who, well, of course, nobody in this room has ever said this, but I'm sure you've heard it. You know, I'll give you something to cry about. Well, if you have a crying child, striking them hardly ever reduces their crying unless you've terrified them into silence. It's this bizarre idea that if we do something more, we'll get a different outcome. We see this in the political realm, of course, and I'll try not to spend too much time there, but there's a very interesting thing that was invented in France called a public-private partnership, PPP. France invented it somewhere in the 80s, I think, and they stopped using it by the end of the 90s because it has never, ever worked. There has never been a time when it has produced what it's supposed to, namely lower costs within budget and provided good for the people at not at their expense. Without exception, across the world, every PPP project has cost more than they said it was going to. It has not added anything to the tax revenue. It has been a net loss for every public institution that's engaged in one. All of them. So why on earth would anybody do it again? And yet we do. And I choose that one because hopefully it's at enough of a distance that it doesn't sort of hit anybody in an uncomfortable place. But there's something about the human condition that says, well, this time it'll be better. You've all heard the classic definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different outcome. Well, we look at what we do, and we look at the arc of our culture, and it has taken us into a place where wealth inequality has risen exponentially in my lifetime. We have a climate crisis that possibly will, you know, if it goes to its worst, would end at least human life on Earth. And we just keep doing these things. So when we go against those, I ask, what's wrong with upside down? What's wrong with going against the stream, the push of our culture that tells us that more is better? My favorite remark about this, about more is better, is somebody said, more is better is the ethic of a cancer cell. More is more. Sometimes it's better. Sometimes it's not. There's all kinds of things, you know. A little bit of this is good. A lot of that same thing is lethal. More is just a measure. It's not a goal. And yet we've turned it into one in so many things. And Jesus says, no, don't be like that. We've gone through the Beatitudes where Jesus says, this is the kind of people you should be. And he says, you're the salt of the earth. You need to be different. If you're like everything else, you're pointless. He said, nobody lights a lamp and puts it under a bushel basket, which is one of those things that as a kid I could just never understand. Because I don't know a lot about lamps or baskets, but I'm pretty sure if you put a basket on top of a lamp, not only is it going to be dark, you're going to set fire to your basket. And I thought, do people actually do that? Is that why Jesus took it? And now I realize hyperbole is the whole point of hyperbole is that it's more than it should be. Jesus says that his coming wasn't to destroy everything that had come before. And that's where one of the problems can be with people who are so fed up with the system, they just want to burn it all down. No. We are not the generation to start from scratch. I don't think that's possible. I don't think it's wise. Jesus comes and says, I have brought something new, but not something that is completely out of nowhere. When he says, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets, but to fulfill them. And Jesus, everything that he says in this passage and in others, is not saying that the Old Testament, the Hebrew Scriptures, the only Scriptures Jesus had, He's not saying those were useless and need to be ignored. He's saying you misunderstood them over and over and over again. Even when Isaiah told you face to face, you're misunderstanding this, you then misunderstood his explanation. Jesus came to say, the things that we think we're doing might not be the right thing. And we don't like hearing that. I don't. I am not one of those people who hates asking for directions. If I didn't get lost, I wouldn't be married. As I told you before, that's how Hadley and I got together in the first place. They navigated me around a city of Regina, one of the easiest cities to navigate in the world, that I could get lost in. 40 years later, I still have a built-in navigator. I don't need GPS when I've got Hadley along, which is very handy. We need to realize that the direction we're going in, if we don't pay attention to where it comes from and where it goes, probably isn't the right one. I don't want to be too hard on our culture because I'm part of it, and I've had benefits from it and all the rest of it. But on the whole, in this time of life, in late-stage capitalism, just about everything, culture writ large, I'm not talking about little pockets here and there, but sort of Western culture writ large, virtually everything it says is wrong. And we fight against it. We fight against it as a congregation. We support Presbyterian World Service and Development. We support Presbyterian sharing. I know many of us support other initiatives that go against the grain of saying that poor people deserve to be poor, that goes against the grain of saying that you should always have as much as you can, you should never let any of it go. But it's a fight, isn't it? It's a challenge. And so when I say what's wrong with upside down, I'm saying it so you realize that everything that you're doing is the right thing. This isn't a message of condemnation. I'm not sure how I'd preach one of those with a straight face, especially about these things that I'm part of. This is what I'm hoping is a reminder that when we're upside down from the culture, when we're going against what our culture says is the way to go, there's a very good chance we're following Jesus. I don't know what Jesus would do if the incarnation happened again, which it won't, if Jesus was here. Now, I don't know what Jesus would do. But I know what we can do. And we can resist that pressure to become people who are less followers of Jesus and more followers of a crowd. A crowd that doesn't really know where it's going. A crowd that just sort of flows into whatever the easiest thing to do is. There's nothing wrong with being upside down when the world is already upside down. There's nothing wrong with going against the stream. There's nothing wrong with going against our culture when we do it from a perspective of what's right. What is the most human thing? How do we bring out the best in ourselves and others in ways that honor God, that honor the image of God within everyone, that honor the value that people have simply because they are? And I remember reading, by no means a religious or spiritual or anything kind of person, who put in the mouth of one of his characters that the only thing that he thought was truly evil was when you treat people like things. And you know, I don't think Jesus would disagree with that. I don't either. When we insist on treating people like people, regardless of who, where, or what they are, we're fighting back against a culture that is not in our favor. And I don't want to beat up on sort of individual anything, and I'm not going to. all of us know people who are exactly like us, in the sense that they're pushing back against something that dehumanizes them or anyone else. Maybe they're religious people explicitly, or maybe they're not, but we know people like that. We know groups like that. We know that this is happening. We're not alone in this pushing back. It's not just this small handful of people. But if you're finding it hard to push back, I hope you remember that it's Jesus who said push. It wasn't me. It wasn't Marx. It wasn't any of the early capitalist theorists. It wasn't any philosopher anywhere. It was Jesus. And then speaking through Paul, saying, don't be just conformed to the world, because that's handy, it's convenient. Jesus said, make a difference. Make as much a difference as a city on a hill, as a lamp on a table. Don't hide who you are. Don't feel you have to light up the whole world. That's a bit beyond any of us. But bring the light that's within you to wherever you are. Amen.